Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Okay, they got off to a lousy start, dropping two games in Detroit, but the Royals are back in town today for their home opener at 3 o'clock, and new hope is in the air. Good morning, everybody. We're coming to you live from the K, where the Royals will be taking on the Chicago White Sox. There's little chance of rain, but the high forecast in the 40s, not exactly perfect baseball weather, but not bad either. Today we'll take a behind-the-scenes look at what goes on out here to get this team ready to play almost every day. We'll talk about the chaos that ensues when a player is called up from the minors. We'll talk to the team's official seamstress, and we'll talk with the man who works with each Royals player to pick the music that plays when they walk up to the plate for another at-bat. But first, joining me this morning is announcer Steve Fizziok. He's here with us, and Steve, so good to have you. Welcome.
Steve, great to be here, and opening day is always so special.
A great time. I should say Steve joins us. This is his third season with the Royals. He's both a voice on the Royals radio network and a play-by-play broadcaster on Fox Sports Kansas City. He was awarded the Mid-America Emmy in 2013 for his work on Royals broadcasts. Steve, so the team lost its first two games, you know, obviously both narrowly to the Tigers. Has that put a damper on this home opener this year?
Not at all, because it was to the American League Central Division champion Detroit Tigers, two of their best pitchers, Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer. That said, I've always felt that if you're going to be a championship team, you've got to beat great pitching. And Verlander and Scherzer are two of the best. So in the future, they have to be able to beat those teams. And I think the number one question mark with the Royals this season is their offense. Can they be better than last year? They were 11th in runs scored. They were dead last in home runs. I know they will be better with the additions of Aoki and Infante and the maturity of Perez and Hosmer and others.
Hey, how did the players themselves react to the two opening losses?
They were great. They were very, very... This is a veteran team that knows they're good. They know how to win. Last year, first 2 months of the season, I believe they were going on hope. They were hoping they could win. Then they figured it out. They not only found out how to lose, but then how to win. And it's interesting how to know how to lose, how to be able to turn the page, wad it up like a piece of paper, throw it in the garbage, and go get them tomorrow. And they have that kind of maturity now with leaders like Alex Gordon, with leaders like Billy Butler, and emerging superstars and a leader like Salvador Perez and Eric Hosmer.
You know, it's interesting to me, Steve, that you describe this team now as a veteran team, because for so many years I've thought of them as something else entirely, and now you're saying, veteran team.
They're a veteran team because they've been through the wars. They're still very young in certain positions. Salvador Perez is 23. Eric Hosmer is 24. Mike Moustakas is 25. And yet they do have the experience. And a lot of their leadership comes from their pitching staff. The guy who is throwing on opening day, Jeremy Guthrie, terrific pitcher, a leader. He has pitched on opening days in the past with the Baltimore Orioles. James Shields, an absolute warrior who will go on Sunday. Bruce Chen is a leader. Jason Vargas is a leader. And they're the guys who are nurturing the up-and-coming superstar, 22-year-old Yordano Ventura, who will go on Tuesday.
Yeah, the expectations this year seem pretty clear-cut. Either get in the playoffs or this season has been something of a bust. Do you buy that?
The way I look at every single year is I always first focus on health. And if this team stays healthy, I believe they'll make the playoffs. They're that good. They have the best team, I believe, in the Central in front of them in the Detroit Tigers. So whether it's the wild card or overtaking the Tigers this year. But what I think Dayton Moore has done, the general manager of the team, is he has not only built a good team on the 25-man roster, but he has built organizational depth. Do they have a starting pitcher who can help out if somebody goes down? I believe they're in a better position for that than Detroit is. And Detroit's going to have some injuries. The Royals are going to have some injuries. But do you have the necessary replacements to help out when guys goes down? But it's like any team. If the Royals lose Salvador Perez or James Shields or Eric Hosmer, it's going to be a tough year. They have to keep their key guys healthy this season to be successful.
Announcer Steve Fizziok is our guest. What do fans need to know about today's game, Steve? And what are you looking for? Again, the opponent, the Chicago White Sox. They're not the Detroit Tigers. What should we be looking for?
Steve, the same thing that you and I were talking about before we took the air. It's memories. It's opening day. You have memories of certain sports moments. You were telling me about the great Wisconsin matchup with Michigan State when the Badgers knocked off the Spartans under Magic Johnson. And that was your memory. Yeah. And for opening days, for me, it's always been about memories, about how a guy pitches. Last year was a tremendous come-from-behind victory by the Royals to win on opening day. And it was so much joy. And I remember Ryan Lefevre, who's in his 15th year as the Royals broadcaster, he said, you know, this team has always struggled on home openers. And to get past that, to show the fans this is a team that can win, was exciting. And in front of 40,000 to do that. And for me, it's going to be another opening day. And you're hoping it builds memories. And little kids who are 10, 11, 12 years old, they go home and they say, hey, did you see Alex Gordon make that catch in left field or make that throw? Those are the memories you want the young people to go back home with, just like you and I had growing up.
You know, what's the tough part of what you do, Steve? I mean, you guys make calling these games sound so effortless, but I can only imagine that it's not. What's the hard part of what you do?
What I do is I prepare for a blowout. I hope for a great game, because a great game tells me what to say. A great game usually lasts 2 hours and 45 minutes. But with baseball, it's the most beautiful sport to broadcast, because it's really 5 minutes of action and 3 hours of conversation. And there's nobody greater at that than Denny Matthews, who's the longtime broadcaster, because you can go back and talk to him about countless opening days or stories that he has had from Royals years in the past. But what I do every single day is I prepare for the game. I prepare for situations, whether it's Jeremy Guthrie facing Adam Dunn or Eric Johnson, a rookie, facing the Royals, Alex Gordon or Billy Butler. What are those situations? So I study for that. But then I let the game tell me what to say.
So a blowout for you is a harder game to call
no
than
question.
Something that's close. I guess I'd never really thought about it that way before.
Well, consider this. Let's say a team has a 9-1 or a 10-0 lead. All of a sudden, strategy is taken away. But the two games we had at Detroit, one was a 4-3 score, the other was a 2-1 score. Every single pitch is so important, and that's what you dissect during the game or after the game. So it's really incredible. But baseball is the most beautiful to broadcast, and more so on radio than on television.
You know, your resume is amazing. You've broadcast games for the Royals, the Cincinnati Bengals, the Reds, the L.A. Angels. For 14 seasons, you were with them. K-State football and basketball, the Golden State Warriors, where you got to watch Chris Mullin and Mitch Richmond play every night. The Vancouver Grizzlies, Stanford, Fresno State. And did I mention the San Francisco Giants, Steve? I mean, what an incredible journey. Tell us about a player or two that you tell your own two grandchildren about.
Well, I was part of the broadcast team that broadcast Pete Rose breaking the all-time hit record set by Ty Cobb.
Yeah.
But the beautiful thing around that I tell people is it was also right around my marriage. And I've been married 29 years in September to Stacy St. James, who's from St. Louis. And that year, 1 month after we were married, the Royals played the Cardinals in the World Championship.
That's right.
But the team would not let me go on my honeymoon until Pete got the hit. He got the hit on a Wednesday. We got married on Saturday, so we had to wait all the way until Wednesday until Pete got the hit. I even have a baseball that's signed, Stacy, Will You Marry Me? And on the other side, it's Pete Rose signing, but not until I get the hit, Pete Rose. And the most beautiful thing about that, he misspelled until. He spelled it I-N-T-I-L, and I said, that's so Pete. It's so beautiful.
Pete. Should he be in the Hall of Fame before you go?
I think he should. I think Curt Nelson's a guy to talk about that.
Yeah.
Because here's a guy who has done it in the past. He has these ridiculous numbers, and what we fail to realize is these are some of the most competitive people in the world. Kobe Bryant's that way. Magic Johnson's that way. Pete Rose was that way. They're incredibly competitive, and they may make some stupid mistakes along the way because Pete may have thought, I can beat the IRS. No, you can't. But back in the day, and Kurt knows this, Cap Anson was a terrible human being. He's in the Hall of Fame. He did more to keep black players out of Major League Baseball than any other individual, and he's in the Hall of Fame. And so I think sometimes we have to honor their numbers. And the other thing is, how long do we hold a grudge before we forgive? And perhaps we need to forgive Pete Rose. Not that we welcome him back and make him a manager, but welcome into the Hall of Fame because of what he did on the field.
Pearls announcer Steve Fizioc. Hey, a pleasure to have you. Good luck with the broadcast today. Thanks for coming by, Steve. Sure.
And ask the same questions to Kurt Nelson, because this guy is one of the great baseball historians in America.
Well, let's go there right now. Kurt Nelson is back with us again. He's the director of the Royals Hall of Fame. Kurt, nice to have you. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Happy opening day to you.
Well,
let's go with that. Should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? What's the Hall of Fame director's response to that?
Well, there's two answers to that for me. One is Pete Rose is in the Hall of Fame, believe it or not, because the Hall of Fame is two separate things. The Hall of Fame is a museum that tells the history of the game,
yeah.
And it's also got a plaque gallery that celebrates the immortals that have been inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. So Pete is in the museum. He is all over the museum. If you go to Cooperstown, you will see Pete Rose.
But he's not there, though.
But he is not in the plaque room, and in that way, you know, that he broke one of the cardinal rules of baseball. If you go down into the clubhouse on both sides of this ballpark, you will see that the one thing that is emblazoned on the doors of that clubhouse is you cannot bet on baseball, period. And Pete knew that, and he did it anyway. So I'm one to think that he should have second chances, and that Pete has probably been his own worst enemy as far as not copping to it earlier and his reaction after that. But his accomplishments are certainly Hall of Fame worthy, so he may end up there someday, but he is in the Hall of Fame. His career is celebrated in Cooperstown.
You know, Kurt, every year the Royals Hall of Fame rotates a new exhibit in from Cooperstown. This year, the exhibit is of the All-Star Game, which began as the game itself began as a one-time only promotion for a non-baseball event, and now it's become what it's become. What do you have this year in terms of this special exhibit from Cooperstown?
Well, the All-Star one was actually from a couple of years ago. That was and we had some great stuff from All-Star Game history, including some artifacts from the very first All-Star Game back in 2012 when we had that one here. This year's is actually we have such a great working relationship with the people in Cooperstown. They've been so fantastic to me. What's special about the exhibit we have this year out there is they're celebrating their 75th anniversary
this year.
So it's 75 years of greatness. So we're celebrating, and we're going to celebrate right along with them. So they've sent some artifacts that represent the 75 years, including an artifact from each of the first five inductees, and then we have some artifacts from at least one person from each decade since then, and a lot of cool.
And the first five, Babe Ruth, run through the list.
Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, Christy Mathewson, Walter Johnson, Ty Cobb, Honus Wagner.
Honus Wagner, there's your five. So, yeah, and what a crew that was.
Now that's the 36 class. It's sort of an interesting thing. The hall didn't open until 39, but the first class was 1936. They had some elections before the hall was ready to be opened. So that's the first five, and we have some artifacts on display. My favorite is a Christy Mathewson cap from his early days, right at the turn of the last century, two centuries ago now. And the other one is a Walter Johnson. He threw one of the greatest pitchers of all time, threw a no-hitter. What I like about him is he's one of two Kansans, born in Kansas, that are in the Hall of Fame.
Did not know that.
The other one being Joe Tinker, who was a Tinker's to Evers to Chance, the third baseman for the Cubs. Both from that early era of baseball, but some very cool artifacts on display.
Yeah, how did you get the job of overseeing the Royals Hall of Fame? How did you get here?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is my career with the Royals began as a seasonal, I call myself a 30-year-old intern. I always wanted to be involved in baseball, went to school to be involved in sports administration, got into grad school and worked at the University of Missouri in that athletic department, got out of sports for a little while, and then wanted to jump back in and took an internship here with my team, the Royals, and that was in the marketing department. I was a marketing guy, and I did that for about a dozen years, and I sort of got the reputation around here as being, I use the term affectionately, the geek, the Royals geek. So to know, you know, oh, I don't know, who remembers that? Oh, Kurt will remember. Go ask him. If anybody remembers, it'll be Kurt. And that's sort of how that happened. So when the renovations came through and we knew we were going to build a specific building that was going to house the story of the Royals and greater the the history of professional baseball in Kansas City, ownership asked if I would take on that project. And of course, it's a labor of love. It's something that I enjoy doing each and every day. I still consider myself a marketer, but I'm sort of an amateur historian, sort of becoming a professional one, I hope.
So as a professional geek, in your words, what do you do every day? What's your job entail?
You know, a lot of it is taking care of the museum, taking care of the artifacts, working on exhibits. I do a lot of some work for other departments in the club, wanting to do some research back into things, housing of pictures, archives, and things like that, being able to recall those sorts of things. So there's that particular thing. There's quite a bit of writing that's involved, which I've come to enjoy over the years. So those are some of the things I do each day.
And the one exhibit, the one artifact you have in the Hall of Fame here that you yourself find most interesting is what?
Well, the best one, of course, is the World Series trophy, because that's all what we're aiming for, and I've got plenty of room for another one, and I'm looking forward to putting it up. I would say, you know, for artifacts, some of my favorite ones are the Royals Baseball Academy stuff, because I think that is such a unique story. It's a story I love telling people. So we have a few artifacts from that, and that's one of my favorite stories, so I enjoy that one.
Well, Kurt Nelson, again, he's director of the Royals Hall of Fame. So good to have you here again. Enjoy opening day. So nice to see you.
Thank you very much for having me, and happy opening day again.
Oh, I appreciate that. Again, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're coming to you live from the K this morning for opening day on what's a blustery day. Maybe not perfect for baseball, but spirits are high out here. Lots of things going on, beginning to happen on the field. The squeegees are coming across the big windows, the 30-foot windows here in the Diamond Club where we're broadcasting from. We have lots of flames on the scoreboard, maybe making people feel a little warmer. Fireworks, I guess that is, making people feel a little warmer, like maybe it's the 4th of July, even though we're not even close to that right now. Well, with me now is the woman who makes the Royals uniforms look so sharp, Bev Vrotny, and so nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, appreciate it. Well, first I have to know, how do you get a job sewing for a Major League Baseball team?
19 years ago, they ran an ad in the Kansas City Star, and it asked for inventory and a seamstress. And I am both. I can do both because I am a manager of a stores. And so it was easy. I came in, applied, and got the job.
And for 19 years you've been doing it.
Right. This is going on my 19th.
And you do what as the official seamstress for the team?
Okay. First of all, I wasn't with the team. I take care of the 500 people that work here. All the ushers, ticket takers, everyone gets shorts, pants, tops, jackets, rain gear.
And you're in charge of all of that.
I'm in charge of the 500 people. And then several years after that, the clubhouses found out they had a seamstress on duty. And so they came down and asked if I could take care of them. So I patch the men's pants. I hem the pants. I make, if they want a knickers from their pants, I make knickers. I put their names and numbers on when they have a new person coming up.
Do you really patch pants? I mean, don't the Royals just go out and buy a new pair of pants when they rip one up?
Absolutely not.
Really? You fix them up?
I fix them up, and I fix the visiting clubhouse up too as well.
For the visitors?
Yep.
Do you do as good a job for the visitors as you do
you
for
know,
the home team?
I would like not to say not, but no, I am very, I enjoy sewing, and I make sure that they look as well as the juniors, or
but,
Royals.
But your main job, though, is to get the players' names on the backs of the uniforms,
of the
right?
Right. Originally, at the beginning of the season, that is done by a vendor. But once they start coming up with people coming up or hiring new ones or whatever, then I take care of them. Or like Billy Butler and some of them, I do a lot of jerseys for them because they sign them and give them away.
Ah, so you have to be stocking up on them then.
Right. Well, the clubhouse provides that. They have a runner that runs things up to me, and then I take care of it.
Where's your home office? Where do you do all this?
My home office is really sweet. It's between the Royals and the Chiefs down in a tunnel.
Oh, really?
And I have a room that houses the 500 garments for our people, and then I take care of the team.
Is it just you, or do you have people who help you?
For a couple of years, I was by myself until the boss decided that in case something happened, that I couldn't do 81 games, they better have somebody else. So I do have two great gals that has worked with me probably about 8 years now, and they help.
So when all heck breaks loose for you, what does that mean? You have a lot of torn uniforms, new players being called up from the minors. What does that mean in your world?
I just know I have to get it done. And prior to this, you know, I used to work full time. I just retired in October, but my full time position was I would go to work at 6 in the morning there and get off at 3 and come here and clock in at 3:30 and work as late as 11 or midnight, depending upon rain delay, extra innings, because I work a good hour after the game's over. But I can be at the sewing machine the whole time. When the guys are on out and they come back in, I might have a box full of gray pants to patch or hem.
Bev Vratney is our guest. She's the seamstress for the Royals. What's one of the longest names you've had to attach to a uniform, and how difficult was that, Bev?
I'm not really certain. I think it was a visiting clubhouse brought one down maybe 3 years ago, and it was like 13 or 14 letters, and you really have to arch it. And it all depends upon the size of the lettering as well. You know, you have the single letter and you have a double letter. Double letter takes up more room.
Do you plan it? Do you sort of draw on the uniform and sort of sketch it out where you've got to be with each of the letters?
I have a plate that I put down that I've created so that I just follow that and put them down. And I press them first, and they usually stay in pretty good, and then I zigzag them on with my machine.
Well, some names can be a bit confusing. Did you ever get letters in the wrong order?
No,
instead of a player out in the field with his name misspelled?
No, I never did that, but I did have a problem with Billy's. They sent me down a 9 instead of a 6. Now, you look at the 9 and a 6, it's the same. However, when we had the All-Star, they had writing on it. And so you had to make sure that the writing was correct. And so I called down to Pat at the clubhouse and said, hey, you've got to give me a 6. And he goes, what do you mean? I gave you a 6. And I go, that's a 9. And he didn't realize the fancy writing on the numbers.
Well, here's the big question. So are you a baseball fan?
I definitely am.
Are you?
Yes.
Can you come up and watch the games?
I wish I could, but I do have a television down there. And if the television is not running, I would listen to it on the radio.
Yeah.
Because my father played until he was 32 or 33, and my brothers played it. But this is the first time I was able to come to a major league ball game and team was when we moved down from Iowa down here in, probably 87. And then we come here quite a bit. And now I come here all the time.
I get a sense it's still a thrill.
It is. I love to watch the boys. I love to watch, you know, Perez shoot out that ball to second base and get somebody out. Or you know, Eric grabbing that ball because Moose has sent it over there fast. And you know, Alex grabbing that ball out in the field. I mean, they're just fun to watch.
Do they know who you are? Do you get to know them?
No.
They don't know who you are?
No.
But you're talking about them like they're your own boys. They're your own sons.
They are.
Yeah.
I've been in their pants. Not them in them, but
yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
I think we catch your drift. Yeah, yeah. But I was going to say it's that kind of familiarity, but not exactly.
Exactly. No.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
just, you know, you just get used to them. You know, you're working with their clothes all the time.
Yeah, I think we're going to play that line from you probably years from now. That's going to be famous around
here. I might get fired.
Yeah.
Can you edit? I mean,
I think it's too late for that,
Bev.
Oh,
no.
Yeah, yeah.
I am so sorry.
Hey, how long ago did you begin preparing for opening day? How long back did
you start? We start in about February. We check a lot of the clothes in, and then by the middle of March, we're fitting all the 500 people. So I've been with it probably about 4 weeks now.
So you've been working hard at it.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, what a pleasure to have you here. Thanks
thank
for taking
you.
Some
well,
time.
Well, thank you, Steve, for inviting
Absolutely,
me.
Absolutely, Bev.
Enjoyed it.
That's Bev Vratney. She's the official seamstress for the Kansas City Royals getting ready here for opening day. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we've got a whole lot more for you. We'll talk with the general manager of scouting and player development. We'll talk about the guy who comes up with the music that plays when the players walk up to the plate for another at-bat, and a whole lot more. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're here and we're back live from the K on this great opening day. We're coming to you live again from the K. We're here as we are every year for the Royals home opener, and we're taking an inside look at what makes this team tick. We're joined now by J.J. Piccolo. He's the Assistant General Manager of Scouting and Player Development, and we'll talk to J.J. about what a player goes through from the time he's drafted to his development in the minors to actually getting a call-up to the majors. And J.J., welcome. Thanks for coming by.
No problem, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's talk about the baseball draft, because you know, it's getting to be a bigger deal, but it sure isn't anything like the NFL draft. Is that because at the end of the day, the baseball draft is such a crapshoot?
Well, I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
But we also, the system we have in place with having six or seven minor league clubs, players aren't going right to the major leagues. They're going to small towns throughout the United States.
Yeah.
We have a team in the Dominican Republic. So I think because of where the players will report the following year or even that summer, it's just not in the mainstream where the NFL, the NBA, they're going right to the parent club.
Yeah. Well, when you draft a player, at the end of the day, J.J., how confident are you that, you know, the player's going to actually wind up, you know, one day making a major league roster somewhere? Do you really know it, or, again, is it still something of a guess?
Well, there's a few guys that you
once
really
in a while,
in your heart, you know, and they're typically your first-round picks, your second-round picks. But, you know, once you get past those picks, which you're talking about the top 30 to 40 players in the country, I wouldn't quite call it a crapshoot because there is some science to it. There is some methodology to it. But it's a very difficult process for players. And the numbers say about 20% of all signed players will eventually play at least one inning in the major leagues or pitch one inning in the major leagues.
20%, one in five.
Yeah. So yeah. It's a small percentage, and about, you know, depending on what research you see, 8 to 10% have a significant major league career. So we know the numbers are not in their favor. However, our scouts believe in the player, and they've signed them for one reason or another, and they believe they have an ability to play in the major leagues, so we'll keep signing them.
So you said a minute ago there is some science to this. The science is what?
Well, we
break it down for me.
Yeah, there's biomechanics that we look at in pitchers. We break down swings through video. We have a lot of experts in our field, hitting coaches, pitching coaches, that help us make decisions on a player's upside, we like to say, or their ceiling. But then we also, in today's day and age, the analytical part of it has come into play with college players in particular. And we can hang our hat on some things that predict a player's success through the minor leagues. Now, how successful they'll be in the major leagues is another thing. But between the scouting evaluation, the knowledge we have with our staff, and then our analytics department, you know, we try to get information from all three and make a very good decision on who we'd like to have in our system.
But does it get in your head sometimes if you're right only one of every five times, in a sense? And again, there's different ways of defining what is right or not. But if you're not right that often, does that mess with your head sometimes and make you second-guess yourself a lot?
Yeah, the guys you don't want to miss on are the guys you invest significantly with their signing bonus.
Yeah.
They're the ones you don't want to miss. But truth be told, the best scouts in the game are the ones that keep signing players. They don't get intimidated by not being correct in their previous assessments, and they just keep signing players because they believe in a player's ability. Or just the person himself, which is a big part of the evaluation process as well.
We're visiting with J.J. Piccolo. He's the General Manager of Scouting and Player Development. Let's talk about one of those big signees that you guys brought on a couple of years ago, Bubba Starling from Gardner-Edgerton High School right here in the Metro. You know, he was the guy, the star to be. He's doing okay in the minors, but maybe not much better than okay. Am I right about that?
Well, you know, when people look at what Bubba has done statistically, just your hard stat that you read in Baseball America or the local paper, the stats are not eye-popping. But what we've seen is a progression in a tremendous athlete, both offensively and defensively, that allows us to continue to believe that Bubba will make an impact in the major leagues. Bubba's very unlike a lot of players that we sign in today's day and age. Specialization in sports really is a big part of baseball, and kids start playing baseball only at 8-10 years old. Bubba's one of those rare guys that played three sports all the way through his senior year in high school, and to jump in the arena of minor league baseball for somebody who hasn't had as many games played as his counterparts is a challenge.
And he was pretty much a can't miss prospect, and you still think he's not going to miss.
No, I don't at all. I really think he's a, just watching it. He does something every night on the baseball field that catches your eye, whether it's a defensive play, a ball he drives in the gap, running from first to home. I mean, he just has a different gear. He's a tremendous competitor. That's one thing that I really think in the long run is going to separate Bubba from others. Every night, he's happy if the team wins, and he's disappointed if the team loses.
And that's it's the not intangible about, that you guys yeah. often look for that you got to have. The great ones all seem to have that
they
edge,
do.
Right?
They put their teammates first. They put the team success first. Bubba's done that since day one, and I think some of that has to do with him being a quarterback. You kind of take on the team's persona. You shoulder the burden of disappointing nights because you're the quarterback. So I think that's inherent in Bubba's makeup. But that will be a separator for him in the long run.
So if things go well for Bubba Starling, he will be here playing at the K on opening day when, JJ?
Well, we'd like to think 2 years from now. I mean, that's in, and of course, we don't know what our major league team will look like at that point. But when I look at Bubba, I think he's in high A this year, the Carolina League. I think once
single A.
Mm-hmm. I think once he gets to double A, that's when he'll start making great strides and things will happen quickly for him. Some players move through the lower levels quickly and slow up in double A and triple A, and then you have some guys that are slower in the beginning and fast at the end, and that's how Bubba's tracking right now.
Did you play baseball yourself?
I did.
Where?
Well, I grew up in Philadelphia, right outside of Veterans Stadium, actually, in Philly, and was rooting hard against the Royals in 1980 as a 9-year-old.
I remember that series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But played baseball my whole life. Did play football and basketball as well, but again, it was different day and age. Specialization didn't come about yet.
Tell me what happens when a player gets called up from the minor leagues to come to the major league team and just how chaotic that can be, those 24 or 48 hours that surround a major moment in any player's life.
Well, it's a very proud moment for the player, his family, and the organization. A lot of time and effort's been put in to get to that one moment in time. But, very often it's after a AAA game is done at 11:30 at night. They might be in Sacramento. And now we have to get them to Kansas City the next day. So the player is going to get a 6 a.m. flight into Kansas City or wherever we're playing. But in addition to just getting himself to Kansas City, trying to get his family to Kansas City for his major league debut, friends texting him, tweeting him.
And you guys want to play him typically that same day to get him over. Like, why? I mean, why is that the...
Well, you don't want him to sit there on the bench just waiting for that moment. And that's something that I observed Bobby Cox do in
from the
my
Braves.
Years in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there was a call-up, he made a call personally to that player. You're going to play tomorrow, you're going to bat seventh. So it really puts that player's mind at ease. And I know Ned has a very similar philosophy about that.
Ned Yost, the Royals manager, yeah.
Yeah, he will let the player know, hey, you're not playing today, but you're playing tomorrow. We might need you. The relievers are the tough one because the game will dictate if the reliever is going to be used. But a position player, Ned will inform them, hey, you're not playing today, you're playing tomorrow, you're playing today. And that just puts their mind at ease, and now they can prepare to play the game.
Well, J.J. Piccolo, again, he's the Assistant General Manager of Scouting and Player Development for the Royals. Thanks for taking a few minutes. You were great. Really enjoyed that.
Thank you, Steve. Enjoyed being on.
You bet. Good luck today, J.J.
Thank you.
Again, if you're just joining us, we're coming to you live from the K on this opening day for your 2014 Kansas City Royals. With me now here in the Diamond Club at the K is Andrew Johnson. He's with Crown Vision. That's the company in charge of the HD video board here at the K. Andrew works with the players in selecting their walk-up music to be played as they come to bat. And thanks for joining me. Good to have you.
You bet. Thanks for having me here.
Well, I understand that this morning was the first chance you had to meet with the players to go over their choice of the tune they're going to have. How long will it take you to get that music loaded into the system and ready to go?
Well, we had a representative from our department down there working with the players this morning, and they've been contacting me all throughout the morning to try and get me some of those songs so we can have those ready by the time the game kicks off today. So it'll take me a little bit of time. I have to go in there and edit the song to where it's 15 seconds in length. So that's a new rule in Major League Baseball this year.
Why
15
seconds?
Music. I don't know. That's just the rule that the league has selected.
So here it is. We're about 4 hours from game time. You still haven't loaded some of the music that the fans are going to hear today when they come out here.
That's correct. I've probably got about half of our music selected in the system that we're going to be utilizing today.
So you're looking at me like, Kraske, keep your questions short. I got to get out of here. I got work to do. Well, what kind of tunes have some of the players picked?
We got a lot of different tunes, a lot of hip-hop songs this year.
Is that new?
That's pretty standard. We've had a lot of hip-hop tunes throughout the year. Mm-hmm. And then we also have Billy Butler. He's a big country music fan, so we'll have some country out here for country music
Can you
fans.
Tell us what songs they've picked yet?
I can't remember them off the top of my head.
Too many songs bouncing around in your head.
We'll keep those as a surprise.
Well, I gather the song that the players pick, that each player picks, this is a big deal, right? I mean, they probably talk about it and laugh about it, and this is something that gets a lot of attention for them. Do the players change from one year to another, and how do they approach this whole decision of picking the song that's heard when they walk up to the plate?
Well, I think anybody as a child, whenever you're thinking about your dreams, you always think about becoming a Major League Baseball player. And I think everybody's kind of had that thought in their head. If you were a Major League Baseball player, what would your walk-up music be? So it is a big decision for these players to decide. But I don't know what their thought process is behind.
Do they ever ask you for your advice?
They do not ask me for my advice.
They're on their own on this thing.
Absolutely.
Can they pick anything they want, or are there restrictions on what they can go with?
There are a few restrictions. I mean, we obviously don't want any vulgarity within
here at the K. Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, they basically have free rein as to their favorite song that they'd like to utilize for their walk-up music.
So if you had a song to play, if you were batting today at the K, what would your song be, Andrew?
You know, there is a new song by an artist called Toby Mac. He is a Christian rock and hip-hop artist, and I think he's got a song off of his brand-new album called Eye On It, which is a pretty heavy, fun rock song.
Yeah. You know, my pick? I think I'd pick something from Jay McShann, the great Kansas City jazz and blues guy his name is so closely tied to Kansas City. That would be one of my songs, you know. You ever had a song requested that was really tough to find?
There are a few songs that are tough to find.
Like what? You think with iTunes and everything else these days, you could get anything you want.
Absolutely. There's a few Latino songs for some of our Latino players that are a little troubling to find.
And what do you do when that happens?
We go to the players and we ask them, hey, we can't find this track. Can you send it to us?
You got a CD in your car? Do they have them sometimes?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What if any two players want the same song?
That's going to be a fight that they're going to have to fight out themselves.
So you can't have two players with the same song?
No, you can't.
Because?
I think we just don't want to play the same song.
We want
something unique for each one of those players.
How do they tend to sort that out?
I don't know. I don't know if that's ever happened. But yeah, I think that's just a decision where they're going to have to go at each other, and they're going to have to play rock, paper, scissors or tic-tac-toe or something to figure out who the winner is to get that song.
So the most popular genre of music that the Royals players tend to pick would be what?
I think it's going to be that hip-hop category. That tends to be what they all listen to right now.
3-4 years ago, do you know what the most popular category would have been?
You know, I don't know what that is. This is going to be my first year in this new role for me.
I'm catching you completely cold.
Yeah, I don't know what the history is.
So if a player asks for, let's say, a classical piece, say the 1812 Overture, would you play it?
You better believe it.
Really? So nothing's off the table here?
Nothing's off the table. If that's what the player would like to walk up to, that's going to be the song we'll play for them.
How important is the walk-up music for the player to get him ready to go to work here?
I think it plays a big role into getting them prepared for what they're about to do. I mean, the songs that they select are probably the songs that they remember from a great experience. So hopefully that's going to prepare them to get up there and make a big hit to give us some runs.
You got this job how?
This is not my first year here at Kauffman Stadium. I've been working for the last few years with the Royals, but in a different role. I was Slugger's handler, the lion tamer. So I've worked within this entertainment department here at Kauffman Stadium and also have a lot of experience working with sports teams here in Kansas City.
Did you want this job? Did you want the job of picking the music for the players?
Absolutely. I think, my role is game day audio director, so I'll be playing all the music, all the sound effects, along with the walk-up music as well. So this has always been a role that I've always wanted to hold.
Oh, that's great. Well, Andrew Johnson, I'm going to let you go because you've got some work to do to get ready for this game today. Got to get that music loaded, and you were great. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Sure, appreciate it. Again, that's Andrew Johnson. He's with Crown Vision. That's the company in charge of the HD video board here at the K and lots of other things. And finally today, we have Toby Cook. He's Vice President of Community Affairs and Publicity for the Royals organization. Toby, I know you've been up very early this morning, and the home opener may be the craziest day of the season, so I really appreciate you taking some time to swing by. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Steve?
How early did you get here today to make all this stuff happen?
My alarm went off at 2:30.
Oh, 2:30!
I hit snooze, and I got up at 2:37, and I was walking in the building at about 3:30. And it was a great start to the day. Our key cards weren't working, and Crown Vision was on the fritz. But by 4:30, everything was perfect, and nobody was up yet, so we were ready to go.
But you are getting up at 2:30. Why? What do you have to do to get ready for this day?
Well, I'm a recovering reporter. I know that you're a current reporter,
yeah.
But I spent 15 years as a television anchor and reporter.
You did a great job,
Well,
too.
Thanks. Here in Kansas City and then a couple of other markets. And I was a big Royals fan growing up. In fact, I really believe that the reason why I'm working for the Royals was because my first dream as an 8 or 9 year old was to be a play-by-play announcer for the Royals. That led me into journalism. I worked at a lot of different stations, and one of the things I insisted on doing as a morning show TV reporter was do live shots from the K previewing Kauffman Stadium's opening day. Well, back then I did it in a dark parking lot, standing there hours before, and there was nobody to interview and there was nothing to show. So when I came here, the first thing that I instituted was this crazy tradition of welcoming all of the media out for their morning broadcasts, and those start now. It didn't used to start this early, but those start at 4:30 in the morning. So by unlocking everything, getting the building ready to go for those live reports, it takes a little bit of time to get started. And now I'm just, you know, by about the second inning, my duties are over, and I'm going to watch the baseball
game. Oh, that sounds great. Well, I imagine, how many reporters did you have out here this morning? I imagine it was a boatload of folks.
It was. It was all four of the local affiliates.
Sure.
We had a couple of radio folks and other reporters that were calling in, and we were doing phone interviews and all. So we had, at any given time, about six crews all at once. And that's, you know, that's a PR guy's dream to get all four stations to cover something.
Yes.
But opening day is just different than, obviously, games 2 through 81. It's the start. I'm not a big NASCAR fan, but I understand in the world of NASCAR it's very similar, where they start with the Daytona 500. The biggest thing that happens during the entire year is the first thing, and then you just kind of ride out the rest of the season. And we have got to get it right on the first day. We can't ease into it.
So you're getting things like what for the reporters are out here? What do they need that you have to be sort of helpful with?
Story ideas. So we're pitching the kind of things that are new here at Kauffman Stadium. Like, we've got a thing called the Royals Boutique, which is a female-oriented clothing store in the outfield experience. We have some newsy-type items like the security measures that we have here at Kauffman Stadium this year that's been ramped up just a little bit, and on and on. And then the old standbys include, how in the world do Trevor Vance and the grounds crew get the field ready in time, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, the good news is it's not going to rain today. At least it's not supposed to. The bad news is it looks like it could. I'm wondering about, we've had some rough storms that have blown through here the last few days. Who provides the weather forecasts here, and just how accurate, how detailed are those reports for an organization that depends so heavily on what's happening outside weather-wise?
Well, my favorite story is, as we play baseball games, the first half of our season is right in the middle of severe weather season in Kansas City, April, May, and June. That's when the biggest severe weather threat is.
Yeah, sure.
And we're playing outdoor baseball, and we're playing a lot of different days and nights. And the interesting moment was a few years ago. Remember the Joplin tornado in May of 2011?
Wow.
Then we had all of these funnel clouds and touchdowns in Kansas City a couple of days later.
Well, I remember that well.
It was right around that time that we were playing a game, and we had a big crowd here. We had about 30,000 people here on a Friday night. And at that moment when we were playing, there were four confirmed funnel cloud formations on radar in the greater Kansas City area, and we had a baseball game going on.
Whoa.
But nothing was imminent to Kauffman Stadium.
And you knew that.
When we knew it, because they were just eagle eye on the radar at that point, and it doesn't do us any good to, we've got severe weather in the area, what are we going to do when it doesn't seem imminent? We just keep playing. And when we feel like something is an imminent threat, and imminent being 15 to 20 minutes away from the stadium, then we would take action to let people know that it's getting ready to get rough.
And your weather forecasts are so detailed that what they monitor exactly what's happening around the K. You know exactly, and that's what you're watching.
Correct.
It's that sort of zoned in on one little area here.
There's an independent weather forecaster called Weather or Not, and we contract with them, and they're on call 24/7 to answer any questions that we have. We were on the phone with them back on May the 1st of last year when, remember, I don't remember if you had the snowstorm that actually postponed a baseball game on May the 2nd. It was a day game.
Yeah, I remember
we
that.
Were 6 hours away from it being an official game, and they called it, and all of these Andrew, our audio guy, was talking about the Latin players. Some of them hadn't seen snow in their lives, and they're standing in the dugout just marveling at this snow falling. Well, we were on the phone with our independent weather forecaster saying, what's it going to be like in 12 hours, what in 24? They nailed it, and we were able to say, we're moving on with the game, because we usually don't call games unless it's already storming by game time. If it's a threat to start in the fourth, fifth inning, we'll go ahead and start and just see what
happens.
But it's a very detailed situation.
So what would happen, Toby, out here if there was a threat of really severe weather, maybe even a tornado, and you've got 30,000 people in this bowl? What's the plan? What do you do?
We have a civil defense plan that we drafted over the years, and we've updated it. And it basically means that we have a plan. You can't see this on radio that I'm doing the quotation marks with my fingers. We have a plan to get a capacity crowd into a sheltered area within 15 minutes.
Wow.
What it really means is that there are a lot of tunnels underneath the building, from the concourses to there's a tunnel that goes underneath the parking lot, and we can get thousands of people protected in a very quick amount of time. It doesn't mean that everybody's going to get underground, but they can get into the concourses with all of that concrete, and there's not a lot of glass there. We at least have got them some cover. Every single usher in the building is assigned to a certain section, and every usher has that plan in place where they know if we start announcing it up on Crown Vision, saying there's severe weather in the area, the PA announcer says, ladies and gentlemen, we have a report of severe weather imminent to the stadium. Please follow the closest usher and their directions. They know where to take that section of people to get them into a safer place than they are when they're sitting out in the stands. Now, we've never had it happen before. So the plan is on paper. We haven't done a 40,000 people drill at this point, but we've been very fortunate that we've never faced that situation.
Yeah, I remember how spooked everyone in Kansas City was in the days after that Joplin tornado. We had severe weather, as you were talking about, in the Kansas City area during the hour of Up to Date one day. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, we were doing a show and then getting, you know, things in my headphones saying, hey, the weather is getting really bad, and I was announcing some stuff to our listeners. And then all of a sudden, I remember looking up at one point, and everyone's gone. I mean, everyone had sort of cleared out, and I'm thinking, well, what am I still doing here? Thanks a lot for leaving the bumpkin, you know, announcer still sitting in his seat. Seigman was gone. Alexander was gone. Everybody was gone, and here I was sitting, and people were so jittery in those days after Joplin, you didn't know what was going to happen.
I remember it so well. In fact, I know exactly where I was when you were on the air that hour, because at about that time, there were funnel clouds being reported all throughout Kansas City, including right over Kauffman Stadium. The only time that, since I've been here, we actually evacuated the associates and took them down to level 2, which if you look out of the Diamond Club, we were right down there and inside under a tunnel. We were watching on TV, and my friends over at Fox 4 News were heading out to do a story separate from the weather. They called and said, we can't do this story, but we don't know if our crew got there or not.
Oh.
And all of a sudden, Fox 4 reporter John Pepitone and his photographer are all huddled down with us in the tunnel. They had managed to get in. And there was a tour group from, I think it was Lamar, Missouri, that was here. And John was doing live shots from the tunnel while that happened.
Wow.
It was a weird day, because it was like the Wednesday after the Joplin tornado. And you're right, people were as jumpy as could be.
I'm visiting with Toby Cook, a spokesman for the Royals. I've got to ask, changing from weather to weddings, the Star just reported that the K will no longer be doing marriage proposals on that big HD screen out in the outfield there. Why not?
We made the decision about a third of the way through last year that we were basically ending the program. We had done it for several years, probably at least 10, and there was a charge of about $500, where if somebody wanted to propose to someone up on the Crown Vision, they would pay us $500, and every cent of that went to Royals Charities. So the club wasn't making any money off of it. What's happened in the business, good for us, is that we have about a minute and a half between the last out of an inning and the first pitch of the next, and all of that time is spoken for, that minute and a half. A lot of it's sponsorship requirements, games, announcements that we do, and we were sneaking these wedding proposals in, and they were becoming more and more frequent, and we were having a harder and harder time scheduling it. So we just decided, we've been talking about it for a couple of years, that we were going to phase it out. When that happened in May or June of last year, I thought, you know what, this is going to be a talkable story at some point, but we didn't announce to the public that we were just getting rid of them. And then sure enough, there was a blog or a website or something that came out about a week ago detailing who did marriage proposals and how much it costs, and the Royals were listed as one who did.
How many proposals, requests for proposals out here were you getting
were getting somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 to 10, and we have 13 homestands a year. And basically it was happening almost once a homestand. At that point, you know, it becomes a, it's really neat a couple of times a year. When it starts happening about every homestand, people are like, okay, here we go again. Oh, my God, I hope she says yes. It was, we were getting a lot of feedback that people weren't crazy about it. We understood that it was also popular with some people, but it just was, it was time for us to move on.
So you're going to have 40,000 people in here today. You ready to go?
We're ready to go.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me last night, are you ready? And I said, you know what? Whatever isn't done, we'll sweep under the rug and nobody will notice.
Well, Toby, always good to have you here. Thanks for taking some time.
You bet. Thanks for coming out to the K.
You bet. It's been a pleasure. It always is. Toby Cook, a spokesman for the Kansas City Royals. We can find all of our broadcasts. Just go to KCUR.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR, up to date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Monday on the show, correspondents from NPR and Bloomsburg News will talk about their lives covering the White House. We had help this week from KCUR's Linda Scher, Michael Byers, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Cody Newell, Brian Ellison, Chris Pruitt, and Bill Anderson. Our senior producer is Steven Steigman. Have a great weekend, all. Coming to you live from the K, I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.